It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go on one of the happiest prayer meeting Wednesdays we've had in quite some time. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to be part of the Mad Cat Mary Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yeah, all you got to do is pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password. Golly Moses, free passwords? No, tell me more. And jump in to the into the merriment. I'm doing that exactly even as we speak. And if you do that, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Earther and BT Blom and Midweek Utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. More will be wandering by because we don't stand on ceremony hereabouts, right? Right. Let's see. I know we're cooking over at headon.live. Not quite sure what's going on at the White Rose Society web server. It's a crapshoot. You don't know what you're going to get. So, at least we're cooking there. All right, let's see. Marty told me to boost my gain. My gain is boosted. Hopefully, I'm not clipping. Because, see, if I do something like that, well, you know, that's almost nothing but clipping, and I'll get lots of hate mail. So, let's don't do that. Let's do this instead. And, you know, maybe with the coming weekend, I'll get a chance to tweak some more. I got to admit, right now, I'm just not spending a whole lot of time back here in the studio. Because, let's see, it warmed all the way up to 46 degrees in here as of airtime. So you can, it's hard to get a lot done while you've got a, you know, heavy winter coat on and all of that kind of stuff. But anyway, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and it is a very happy one. It's the first joyous occasion that I think many of us have really felt in a while. Not that we tie our happiness to things like political outcomes, but it's been a long, long, long trip getting here from January 20th. That's true. Earther pointing out, ooh, but the clipping is a good way to do Alex Jones without coughing up your larynx. Yeah, but you don't see the mail I get, Earther. You just don't, right? So it's prayer meeting Wednesday, middle of the week, downhill to Friday. This is the week before Christmas. Christmas will be a week from Monday. And do let's remember that as it currently stands, I uh, I will not be broadcasting Christmas night. Tuesday, probably. Probably be on the air for Friday on the front porch on the 22nd. Ferg will probably be standing by with a little. He's been reading the account from the Gospel of Luke since he could read, so we may as well keep up with that. Might as well keep up that tradition to the best of our ability. I think we've missed maybe a year or two. What? Oh, never mind. So let's do what we do at the beginning of every program. The general reminder is that this is a listener supported broadcast operation, and we have subscribers. And on this, the 13th day of the month, we have one. And I'll bet you Gary out in Oregon would love to have some company on the 13th day of the month. But we have one, and so thank you very kindly to Gary out in Oregon. Thank you very much indeed. That means that what was a $185 fundraising goal at the end of the program last night went to $175, and with tonight included, well, when we get around to passing those heavy brass-bound velvet-lined plates, the fundraising goal for the evening will be $375. I have good news, however. There is, courtesy of Chris in Germany, a $100 challenge on the table. Uh-huh. So that means that if you kick in 10, Chris kicks in 10. If you kick in 20, Chris kicks in 20. Up to 100 bucks. If you kick in right now, just kick in 100 bucks, somebody, anybody, whatever, then it's doubled, up to, you know, $100. Chris is not doubling everything that happens tonight. But if Chris's challenge gets met, then we have only $175 to raise, and we won't be in quite so hellish a pit come Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. Okay? So you know how this works. If you'd like to, double your money to 20 bucks, kick in 10, and click that little box so Gary will have some company in terms of subscribers this evening. That'd be nice. Maybe we could how about 10 $10 new subscribers this evening, getting your money doubled this evening courtesy of Chris. How about that? Could we do that? It'd be wonderful. Okay. That being the case, let us move into the on into the other parts of the program. Like I said, it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and you know what? These darker days of the year take a toll, and today's Prayer Meeting Wednesday is partially underwritten by the hardworking peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, who are proud for this time of the year to bring you Enchanted Echinacea. Yes, 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 from the peripatetic scientific geniuses at Horn Nutraceutical Lavatories, who brought you groundbreaking nutritional supplements such as Rancid Ramps, Melancholy Milk Thistle, Hard-Ass Jojoba, Pernicious Pumpkin, Sensational Sex Clams, Grandiloquent Grapefruit, Sweaty Swamp Cabbage, and other some such bullshit. Introducing Enchanted Echinacea. Folks, are you less than satisfied with the size of your schmackle, guys? Do you happen to be a resident of a certain southwestern metropolitan area who's afraid the Germans are going to cut off your Johnson? Are you an elected official too embarrassed to whip out your willy while you're in the midst of some locker room talk with Billy? Enchanted Echinacea helps bolster the size of your manhood so bigly, in fact, folks will start assuming you're packing a Fiji bottle in your banana hammock. The size of your dong will give the Hubble Deep Field Space Telescope vastness envy. Oh, this is good. And ladies, when you get that not-so-fresh feeling in your happy place, Enchanted Echinacea is 300% more effective than Gwyneth Paltrow's vaginal steam kettle. Just insert as illustrated in the directions pamphlet, and you'll be good to go. Why, it may even take you out to the glades and help get rid of the AIDS. Each order of enchanted echinacea ships, damn it, in 3 easy-to-open blister packs for your pill-popping convenience. Plus, we'll include not one but 2 bundles of test strips so you can evaluate the sheer expanse of your credulity right in the comfort of your own cottage. As a bonus, if you order between now and Christmas Eve, we'll throw in an extra 3-month supply of enchanted echinacea for only double the regular price. Hurry before supplies last. Enchanted Echinacea comes with a 30-day money-front guarantee. If, for any reason, you're not satisfied with your order of Enchanted Echinacea, you can keep the entire 3-month supply and we'll charge your credit card twice. That's right, you'll pay double the price for the same bullshit nutritional supplement. Call now, as operators are standing by in the parking lot smoking with the sinners. And just for the holidays, you'll have a chance to win your very own Enchanted Echinacea fully loaded double fine gift basket if you tweet us at Horn Labs with the hashtag The Pederast Almost Won. Again, tweet us at Horn Labs with the hashtag The Pederast Almost Won. You know, I never cared worth a pillar of salt for echinacea, and if it wasn't for enchanted echinacea, I wouldn't be able to take my recommended daily intake of echinacea in a million years. Enchanted echinacea only from Horn Labs. Expect no prostitutes, post no bills, pull no punches, objects may disappear larger than they appear. COD, FOB, NSA, FBI, NWA, MSNBC, PTSD. Also available at the mall and most pharmacies of ill repute. Enchanted Echinacea, ask for it with shame. Only from Horn Nutraceuticals. My goodness gracious. I can't wait to not get my hands on some enchanted echinacea. This has got your paleo chocolate chicken bone malted goobly just whooped all to thunder. Yeah, I know. We're still working on it, Steve. Yeah. You're crackling at the peak, partner. Yeah, I get that. So it is prayer meeting Wednesday. And while everybody is filing in, I will let you know that it was a happy evening there in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, the great big institutional kitchen of the Fellowship Hall. In fact, the little old blue-haired ladies were so excited that they handed me a big bucket of brined marinated pork shoulders butts and sent me out. Well, it was safe to have butts because that meant that Roy Moore wouldn't be around. Well, you get the idea. And sent me out to fire up the smoker, which I then did. Yep, and they, meanwhile, well, they whipped up a gigantic batch of good old-fashioned Dick Howell's hot slaw to go with the barbecue, made up a pot of nice, thin, tangy, blazing, spicy barbecue sauce. And then they got busy making the, and you probably never heard of this before, but mercy sakes, it is good, white barbecue sauce potato salad. Ooh, 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 yum, yum, yum. Yes, indeed. So we had they bought the fancy buns, the one with the sesame seeds, and so we had barbecues there in the Fellowship Hall. And. And they were feeling so frisky that they made, yes indeed, they made a three layer coconut yellow whiskey cake. Oh, it was sopping. Look, folks, if you get hurt when the deacons come around with the plates this evening, blame the little old blue haired ladies, because I mean they went a little bit crazy. They soaked those coconut cakes, and of course we didn't let the youngins get anywhere near it. Not that it would have done any good if we had, because you know how the deacons are. But the deacons in turn soaked up the whiskey-soaked coconut cake and trundled their massive bulk up those couple of flights of stairs and stood out in the parking lot smoking with the sinners and the peripatetic scientists and the operators from Horn Nutraceuticals. They're all one and the same, you know. And stood there doing exactly that until such time as Sister Carol Baker showed up with the Cathedral of Common Sense solar-powered cattle charger and proceeded to call the faithful to the flock. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. So we will. We'll get things started in fairly short order. We will send. Well, you know what happens. All Sister Carol has to do is stand there at the vestibule doorway, and wave that solar powered cattle prod, and daggum them deacons. Well, there's going to be a couple of black eyes and a couple of bruises here and there, because after the whiskey-soaked coconut cake, when they come a-running, they didn't come a-running any too steady. We'll just put it that way, all right? Mm-hmm. But they did. They got through there, down past that desiccated bowl of butter mints, and they're standing by here, folks. They're standing by, waiting to see if the faithful will answer Chris and Germany's challenge as we call forth the minister of music to lead us in the offertory hymn. Mm-hmm. So just remember, when that plate comes passing along, you got every head bowed, every eye closed. We know the drill, but you keep one just scrunched a little bit open. I'm doing it right now. And you pass the plate, and you keep that eye scrunched open so you don't get hit, and the next person sitting next to you doesn't get a concussion either, and you just push that little PayPal button in the bottom of the dish, and pass it on. Mm-hmm. Yes. So with that being the case, and understanding that they're a little unsteady on their pins, we will call up the minister of music, brother minister of music. If you would come and lead us in the offertory hymn. Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes. Because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, hut, sut, rilla, raw, and the Ralston, and a brawl, a suet. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, into prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. I'm a calling on you. I'm a calling on you to stand up, get on your feet, and out of your seat. And scrunch and weeble and wobble and wiggle. and move without rhythm so as to not attract the worms, and come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. Glory. Amen. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Pissed Off Penitent, Bob Kincaid. And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. And it is a day of joyful celebration. Well, for some. Brethren and sistren, the heathens and the demoncrats are probably having naked orgies, even as we spoke, ish thing. Yes, indeed, brethren and sistren, because that godly man, that godly fondler, Roy Moore, has done been whooped. That's right, he has. He has done been whooped in a Senate race down in Alabama. Yes. But there's going to be consequences, lots of consequences. Oh, yes. You can just ask Roy Moore's brother, Jerry Moore, Debbie Elliott of the demon glory infested NPR. Went down out into the woods summers and done found Jerry Moore to ax him about why it was that the Lord God Almighty done let Roy get whooped. And in interviewing him, Jerry Moore spoke for the Lord God Almighty. And he said, "It might not happen on this earth right now, but Doug Jones will pay for what he's saying, and them Democrat people that's out there and those Republicans in Washington, they're going to have to answer to God." So, well, we've got that going for us. Now, ever since I read that story earlier today, I've been trying to figure out which is worse. Having to answer in some potential afterlife, some imaginary afterlife, having to answer to Roy and Jerry's blood-soaked deity, or, since we referenced him on the program last night, Colonel Bat Guano from Dr. Strangelove, who said, "Don't you try any of those free versions. Don't do nothing. And if you're not who you say you are, you'll have to answer to the Coca-Cola company." I don't know about you, but I get a little queasy at the notion of having to answer to the Coca-Cola company. Doug Jones will pay for what he's saying. Because Doug Jones is saying, what's the first thing Doug Jones said? Oh, yeah. First thing Doug Jones said was, we need to get busy and reauthorize CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. That certainly does say, I guess the god of Roy Moore, who, after all, led Roy Moore to grope and play Mr. McFeely on a 14-year-old little girl when he was 32. I guess maybe the god of Roy Moore would get pretty wrought about making sure that little children can go to the doctor when they're sick. Jesus, these fools. Absolutely. Going back to a previous topic, James wants to know, can I get that enchanted echinacea delivered in a discreet package? Absolutely. There's nothing to indicate that it's coming from Horn Nutraceuticals or that it contains something as potent as, you know, enchanted echinacea. Oh, big thanks. Thank you very kindly to Scott. Scott down in Florida. Thank you very kindly for getting us started. Assuming everybody else jumps in and we finish the challenge, you just doubled your money. So thank you very kindly, and that means we've only got $275 to go. And I'm sorry, $365. Hello. $365 to go, and $90 to go on the challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. The deacons, to the best that they are able, given their sort of sodden state right now, the deacons will continue to pass the plates throughout the program. Notes coming in from Steve in New York. I just received a relevation, says Steve. If you're not who you say you are, you're someone else. That's profound. Truly, that is a manifestation of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. You better believe it. Meanwhile, our buddy Todd in South Carolina stands said, celebration food, chicken, pepperoni, and Italian cheese. Yes, indeed, that sounds right tasty. I'll have some, thanks. Steve also noting, since Alabama passed their one-question test, I may have to root for Alabama in the playoffs. I think you owe it to yourself. After all, they're playing, that college from South Carolina that goes to school there on the old John C. Calhoun plantation. So let's roll tide, y'all. Just remember. Every time Alabama wins, Steve Bannon grows a new gin blossom, or a new lobe on his cauliflower ear, or something. Okay. Well, message from Batman: I'm having a Snickers bar. Well, you know, you're not you when you're hungry. I try not to eat that kind of thing anymore. Every now and then I fall off the wagon, but this is a tough time of year for that, too. But I understand. Let's see, question coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Raleigh, tell me, Bob, does the Dick Howell hot slaw make your dick howl? Just asking. You know, that's, I'm sure you know, Ron, that's not the first time that, you can always hop in the ride and head on over to that northwest corner of Alabama and find out for sure. It's never done that to me, but it has made my taste buds sing arias, without a doubt. All right, so thank you very kindly. Hung Like Jesus says, put me down for $20. And I will do that. So that means we're now down to $345 and $70 to go in fundraising for $70 to go in fundraising for Chris's challenge. Yes. So all kidding aside, today is pretty much Roy Moore post-mortem day. I sat and watched the returns roll in. There were a couple of telling things. I watched MSNBC. You know why I watched MSNBC? As I noted on Twitter, MSNBC, as opposed to CNN, had 100% less Santorum. I clicked over there during a commercial, and there sat that pontificating, bloviating, fetus fondling, frothy mixture. And, I then decided that, you know, I could probably handle the Gordo commercial. I could tolerate that a lot more easily than I could the, Bro-Fro mix. But it was interesting to watch the map there. At MSNBC, because they persistently, even when other vote tracking maps had colored it, they left Dallas County, Alabama, grayed out on MSNBC till almost the very end. Dallas County, Alabama, well, the county seat there is Selma. And so, so when they finally colored in Dallas County, that was the moment at which MSNBC said that Doug Jones had gone ahead. And then the last one to get filled in was, I believe, Hale County. But it was a beautiful night, wasn't it? And I hope you will forgive me if forgiving is needed. If not, don't bother. You're right. Steve in New York says, on a serious note, black folks did the heavy lifting again. African-American women and African-American men got it. Well, they passed their one question IQ test with flying colors. White women, not so much. I mean, the breakout was pretty interesting. I think I saved a photo of it, a screenshot of it. Yeah, there it is. Percentage of support for Doug Jones. African American support for Doug Jones, 96%. Support from those who disapprove of Donald Trump, 93%. People aged 18 to 29, the so-called millennials, 60%. Women generally, 57%. College graduates, 54%. White folks, 30%. Now, I don't want to get all Sherlock Holmes or Mr. Spock or anything, but I'd say that applying some deductive logic to that list, we get a pretty good idea where the problem lies. Not just in Alabama, but in a lot of the country. And hearkening back to the conversation from Monday with Dr. Phillips, oh, timeout. Sneezes are no more fun with televangelist mics than they are with great big Electric Voice RE20s. Either way, you don't want to hear them. But hearkening back to what Dr. Phillips said, I think he stands vindicated, because there you have it. 70% of white folks in Alabama voted for a child molester. Just let that sink in for a minute. Okay, let's put the child molester part aside. 70% of the people in Alabama voted for a guy who was so corrupt, he got thrown out of his elected office twice. Not once, but twice. 70% of white people in Alabama voted for a guy who said America, the last time America was great was when we still had slavery. 70% of white people in Alabama voted for a guy who said that it should be illegal for people to be gay. 70% of white folks in Alabama voted for a guy who said that Muslims should not be allowed to hold elective office anywhere in the United States of America. That's who 70% of white folks voted for in Alabama last night. And that same list you can attribute to when the majority gets it right, you get to hope. You know, there's 4% of African Americans who voted the same way. There's 7% of people who disapproved of Donald Trump who voted the same way. There's 40% of millennials who voted the same way. 43% of women who voted the same way, and 46% of college graduates who voted the same way. But it's that aggregate 70% of white folks who got it really, really, really wrong. As Ron and Raleigh points out, another example of black folks pulling white folks' feet from the fire. Imagine if white folks voted with black folks all the time. Well, there wouldn't be a Republican Party. I don't call that imagining. I call that dreaming. I mean, that's not dream. That's like a fantasy. But yes, African Americans in Alabama saved white Alabamians from themselves again, because they enabled a man to go to the Senate of the United States and add one more voice to the voices of those who are saying that people need to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Now, what's that, Steve? Steve in New York says, after this, I'll shut up, but I have to note this. White people suck. Let's not make it quite that blanket. But 70% of white people in Alabama do. You know, a lot. In 2016, 53% of white women did. A lot. And this isn't just a matter of getting something, having a political opinion different from my own, or your own, or our own. This is a question of the consequences that come from the having of that opinion. The actual, active, real-world harm that gets done to people as a result of that opinion. And there's a whole lot to be said about last night's results, but I'm going to say this. I sat and watched over the last several weeks as Democratic, progressive, liberal, what have you pundits, great and small, said things like, when Alabama sends Roy Moore to the Senate, or Alabama will send Roy Moore to the Senate, Roy Moore is a lock to win that Senate seat, etc., 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 etc. And it pissed me off. I read it in article, opinion pieces on the Washington Post. I read it in opinions on the New York Times. I read it coming from so-called progressive think tanks. And I'm not one to go in for self-fulfilling prophecies, especially not that one. But I want to take a moment this evening, if I may, please. And point out that, you know, there's an archive of this program. And if you go back to roughly the... go and check the date. I don't have it right in front of me. Go and check the date of the runoff between Big Luther and Roy Moore. And whatever the date of that is, within a couple of days of that that runoff election, I got behind the microphone here. And okay, that's right. Arthur says, for the last time, Bob, remember, Roy Moore is a child enthusiast. Yes, he's an enthusiast. But I got behind the microphone here and I said that Doug Jones and you know, there's a certain evolution to this, because at one point in time, I said Doug Jones was just another Democratic Party sacrificial lamb. And anybody could be forgiven for saying something like that, because, well, the Democratic Party in Alabama has largely been moribund. But in the immediate aftermath of Roy Tola Moore winning that runoff election to become the Republican nominee for Senate in Alabama, I got behind the microphone here and I said that Doug Jones could win. I may very well be the first, I may possibly be the only person who said that Doug Jones could win outside the Jones campaign. But I said it, and I didn't back down from it. You might recall that I said that not only did I say he could win, I went about saying how he could win. And the how he could win tracked exactly with how he won. And it all stemmed from the fact that I noticed the morning after that runoff election, it's on my Twitter timeline too, that he won with 7.5% of the eligible voters in Alabama voting for him, because turnout in the runoff was 14%. It was 19% for the general Republican primary. And when I saw that 7.5% number, I realized that there was an enthusiasm deficit in the Republican Party. Steve from Georgistan remembers, calling me Gordo again. You know, you'd think I was over there at Steve's house farting on his couch or something. Steve from Georgistan says, I gave a donation that night, Gordo. I was going to hit you, and you instructed me to detour it to Doug Jones. I remember that myself. I remember a couple of nights asking people to please support the Jones campaign. So, it's just a reminder. We don't have a huge community here. We don't have 3.5 million views like some folks brag about over on the YouTube. We joke about it, but it's imaginary. There's no Gulfstream 5 sitting in the hangar over there, and I'm certainly down one Maybach. But I dare say that if you want to get out in front of the curve. If you want to be so far in front of the curve that you feel like you're on straight road, tell your friends and neighbors that this is where you come to, he said, leaving a preposition hanging precariously at the end of that sentence at. I not only got last night right, but I got it right the way it happened. Now, if only this was really a church, and if only I really was a megalomaniacal minister of the gospel, I'd be standing here telling you that I had been blessed with the Holy Spirit gift of prophecy. But we don't really have any enchanting echinacea to sell. The idea of selling you bucket pudding is absolutely rebuckinant to me. And I'm certainly not saying that I am, you know, Bob Kincaid, super genius. But I get a lot more right than I get wrong. Meanwhile, you tune into CNN like I did briefly last night, and there sits a guy who, if you asked him what color the sky was, and he said blue, you would have to run to the window to make sure he wasn't lying to you again. You know, Rick Santorum. Now, I freely admit that it wasn't a matter of faith. If it was a matter of faith, we would say that along the way, my faith wavered. Sparky was asking me last night, was I going to eat crow tonight? And I told him I didn't feel like there was any crow to eat. Because I'd been right about this all along. And two nights ago, Monday night, Steve from Georgistan said, I'm calling you out. How's it going to end? And I said, well, my heart tells me Doug Jones is going to win, but my head tells me that this is still Alabama we're talking about. And I tend to follow my head instead of my heart. That, for instance, is why I never bet on the West Virginia University Mountaineers in football, and especially not in bowl games. I don't take the over, I don't take the under, I don't take the points, I don't give the points. I do not bet on West Virginia University football, because I know I'll bet with my heart, and my heart will get stomped. But damned if I didn't get this one right. And damned if just about everybody didn't get it wrong. Even the polls. I saw where there was an aggregation of all the polls right before election time. And they were for shit. With the exception of who? The Washington Post. Who got it exactly right at Jones by 2%. Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, in a desperate effort to motivate the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers of Fox News and you know, Comrade Kumquat and the child enthusiast and the evangelicals. They cranked out a poll that said Doug Jones was ahead by 10 points, thinking that that might motivate the get out the vote a little bit. It didn't work. But I am. I am what I think is justifiably proud of being one of, if not the only person, who even before the molestation allegations broke, said that this was a winnable race. And you know what? Just as I predicted, or predicted, just as I posited, right when it mattered most, Barack Obama himself entered the fray. And I believe, there was a robocall or some such. He spoke up on Doug Jones's behalf. So we've got that. Let me answer an email real quick. Note coming in from Michael in Madison, subject line Doug Jones. Same here, says Michael. I made my first contribution to Doug Jones that night that you redirected listeners away from the horn and to the Jones campaign. I made my first Facebook post about Jones at the same time, for what it's worth. And that was all well before the Roy Moore kitty diddling stories came to light. Even then, no one, media or otherwise, was talking about Jones. All the talk was about Crazy Roy. Thanks, Bob, says Michael. This was about the only good news I've had in 2 years. Alabama's black community obviously did all the heavy lifting, but I'm just glad I was able to get along for the ride, too, and early at that, thanks in no small part to you. It feels good. It does feel good. We've kind of forgotten what it feels like to win. I mean, yes, there was the Virginia elections and everything, but somehow, this has a seismic quality to it, doesn't it? And while the excuses were being made last night, the fact of the matter is, you know, this has the feeling of not being a one-off. And that's something else I said early on. If Doug Jones could win this race, it would open up a groundbreaking shift in Southern politics. Now, it's not all going to happen at once. But this was exemplary. And it proves what happens when you have a good organization on the ground, and when you work tirelessly, and when people refuse to be disenfranchised. Thank you, Arthur. So much winning, Kincaid. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. Shut the fuck up, Donnie. I presume that Scott and Punky are honoring their previous pledge not to call in until they've watched a certain film. I hope that doesn't mean that, you know, it's March or something, because then if it's March, like, you know, Earther will win the pool. But this indicates a change, and this indicates the possibility of greater change. Yes, my county, the county where I grew up, the two counties where I grew up, running back and forth across the Tennessee River, they stayed red. But in town was blue, and out in the county was red. But you know what? It was less red than it was a year ago. And consider that the turnout of the African-American vote in Alabama was higher than the turnout was for Barack Obama in either 08 or 12. That demonstrates a great deal of determination. And that's why it does feel good. And that's why it serves as a catalyst to keep moving, to climb or die. Well, thank you. I think, Brother Deacon Asa says, if you were running this the way a real religious hustler would, you'd be taking in $600,000 a sermon like Joel Osteen does. I don't know what I'd do aside. I don't think I could handle that. But do me a favor. I almost never ask for anything like this. But as people discuss this, you know, out on social media, maybe mention, yeah, one guy got this right, and he's got a pretty good track record on other stuff. One guy got this right. Bob Kincaid got this right. Oh, there's not going to be a certificate suitable for framing or anything. But, and you know, there's no magic math. It's more a matter of, and we know how dangerous I think the word believe is. It's more a matter of believing that there yet remains some decency in some of what we presume to be some of the most indecent places. And any place that is really, really Trumpy is by definition subject to being viewed as indecent. Imagine that. Alabama is now technically far less Trumpy than my own West Virginia is. That hurts. Charlie asking, has the diddler on the roof, Roy, conceded yet? Wait a minute. Yeah, there's a cowbell for diddler on the roof. That's good. I haven't heard that one before. As of last night, he hadn't. And apparently, there's a reason for that. Elena Plott, who writes at the Washingtonian, comes from Alabama. She grew up in Alabama. And over on Twitter, she said, Moore's refusal to concede speaks volumes about the current crisis of Christian evangelicalism in America. To be clear, for a candidate to say he is waiting for God to speak these election results is to say he is waiting for God to anoint him, the rightful victor. It is to say there is no world in which God would will for a Democrat to win. All of which is to say, of course, that none of this, as with so much of the largely white Christian evangelicalism these days, is really about God. It is about men and women consumed by a hubris and tribal derangement. There's that word tribal again. Could we lose tribal from our vocabularies like yesterday, pretty please? Because every time I see somebody describe something or say something, it's oh, well, you know, we're being very tribal in our politics. That pisses me off. Because all that is shitting on tribal people who don't do the vicious, mean, nasty, hateful things that most of non-tribal America does at one time or another. Anyway, Elena Plott says, it is about men and women consumed by a hubris and tribal derangement that God reflects their politics, when moments like these should actually encourage good faith evangelical Christians to question whether their politics are reflecting God. That is reminiscent of what of the response that Abraham Lincoln gave during the Civil War when somebody said, Abe, do you reckon God is on our side? And Lincoln, who really didn't have much for religion or faith or deities or anything, said, I'm much more concerned with whether we are on God's. But Roy Moore cannot concede because Roy Moore is convinced that his God would never allow a Democrat to win. And that's why you get Jerry Moore, Roy's brother, standing out there literally calling for God to strike Doug Jones dead. He'll answer for what he done did. And I'm sure that the evangelical freaks in Alabama will be busy imprecatory praying just any time now. You know, with that verse from Psalms they were so fond of quoting during Barack Obama's presidency. Let his wife be a widow and his children be without a father. You know, because God is love, y'all. If there are demons walking the earth, they're living in Southern Baptist churches and Methodist churches. And they take the form of Roy Moore. And they take the form of Kayla Moore. And they take the form of the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay? That's where it is. But no, he hasn't conceded. And let me go ahead and go out on a limb and tell you where the... And I mentioned this last night, too, off air. Here's where the next fight is. Actually getting Doug Jones into the Senate. Now, Mitch McConnell breathed a little sigh of relief when Roy Moore lost, because he knew that even though it wouldn't have ultimately meant anything to the Republican Party, he didn't want to be sidetracked from his vicious, bloodthirsty agenda by constantly answering questions about, you know, why that there Roy Moore was still in the Senate and why hadn't they done kicking him out. But he's still not particularly thrilled about having Alabama send a damn Democrat up to Washington. And so consequently, he's in no hurry whatsoever to swear Doug Jones in. There needs to be a massive national campaign with a hashtag like Seat Senator Jones Now. Big Luther Strange, who is presently occupying the seat that belongs to Doug Jones, should have resigned by now, but of course he hasn't, because because he needs to deliver a righteous fucking to the American people in the form of that godforsaken tax scam bill of theirs. Because that is chief on Mitch McConnell's list, and Mitch McConnell would march through 1,000-foot fires in hell to make sure that he gives his owners, because he's not a person exercising his own agency. Mitch McConnell is a creature. Mitch McConnell is the wholly owned property of people like the Koch brothers and the 1% in this country. Uber super rich. The CEO class. And he is scared to death that Doug Jones might get in there and be another no vote. And he's got no votes he can afford to lose. Because the conference committee compromise bill has apparently come out. Don't really know what's in it because Mitch has said and Paul Ryan has said that we don't have any business knowing what's in it. We'll probably only learn what's in it after they've voted on it. If you consider the way that the previous bill was handled. So it becomes imperative to seat Doug Jones. The Secretary of State of Alabama, who notoriously once stated that as long as he was Secretary of State, he'd make sure you had to, by God, put out some effort if you wanted to vote. Because, you know, voting should be hard. I mean, it's a constitutional right and everything, but that doesn't mean you should just be able to do it because, you know, you've got that right. You got to sweat a little bit for your right to vote to really matter. That's why all the skullduggery went on. And you know, that's another moment to just sit back and praise and appreciate and cherish the effort of people who went out to vote yesterday in Alabama, particularly in the black community, particularly because Jim Crow ain't dead in Alabama. The stories of people showing up, people of color, and being told that they were on the inactive list and having to jump through all the hoops of being able to get active again before they could vote were all over the state. Polling places that had an insufficient number of people checking IDs so that the lines would get nice and long and people would maybe give up and go home so that the white evangelicals could do their filthy racist business. Yesterday was a day of courage. And for anybody who never has a problem going and voting, it may be difficult to comprehend. But yesterday was a day of courage. A day of guts, a day of determination. And Doug Jones appears to know it. He knows what kind of agenda he's got to advance in Alabama, in the Senate. That's why he's talking about CHIP. The Children's Health Insurance Program will have the continuation of it has a profound impact on the community of color in Alabama. So does the Medicaid expansion. Oh my God, so does the Medicaid expansion. And so I think we all need to make sure that we all need to make sure that we support and appreciate the effort that went into last night. And then redouble the effort to get Doug Jones seated in the Senate. Because, like I said, the Alabama Secretary of State says that, I probably won't be done with the paperwork until, I don't know, long about December the 29th. Doesn't take that long. It doesn't take that long at all. in fact, we have clear evidence that it doesn't. There was a over on Twitter, there's a fellow who had been Secretary of State, of the state of Missouri. A guy by the name of Jason Kander, K-A-N-D-E-R. He said, when I was Secretary of State of Missouri, I certified to Speaker Boehner that he could seat Representative Jason Smith the day after his special election. Representative Smith is a Republican, and I am a Democrat. And I could have waited weeks. But I did the right thing for Missouri. Alabama should do the same. So make no mistake. If the Alabama Secretary of State says, well, golly gee, jumping Jehoshaphat, we sure do have a whole lots of paperwork to go through, and my goodness gracious, we're gonna hand count every ballot, make sure every vote gets counted. Gotta wait for the last of them military ballots to come in there, and we're gonna have to make sure and tally, make sure everybody who got voted for on a write-in basis gets their write-in vote counted, and so as we can publish it right and everything. It's all bullshit. A pressure campaign needs to be brought to bear on the Secretary of State of Alabama to certify the vote and put it in Mitch McConnell's hands so that Doug Jones can take his Senate seat yesterday. That's the fight now. Because, see, the other thing that Mitch McConnell wants to do, and he, you know, he's still out there playing chess. He wants to limit the amount of time that Doug Jones is actually in the Senate. And slow walking his swearing in is part of it. Even though back when it was Scott Brown coming in to fill an unexpired term, hoo-wee! Mitch McConnell had his hair on fire and was jumping up and down like he had like he had rattlesnakes in his pants, wanting Scott Brown done to be swore in. But now he's just, oh golly, he's not in that much of a hurry, you know. Victories are only victories if you can act on them. And so consequently, every day that Doug Jones is kept out of the Senate is another day that the people who went and voted for him remain disenfranchised. Luther Strange has no right whatsoever, as of the minute that that race was called, to be in the Senate of the United States from Alabama. He is sitting in Doug Jones's seat. You know, much in the way that Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch is sitting in Merrick Garland's seat. See how it works? So that's the coming fight. And I hope to goodness we've got the stomach for it. And I hope the people of Alabama have the stomach for it. Might be time to get a few thousand people to surround the Secretary of State's office and tell him to quit fucking around and get busy. There's no way it takes till December the 26th to 29th to get this done. Hell, like I said, Christmas is 2 weeks from yesterday. And the Senate is still in session because of that precious tax cut bill. Act quickly, and Doug Jones might conceivably be able to go up there and really make Mitch McConnell's life miserable. Jesus, Donald Trump, who called him, you caught this too, right? Donald Trump, who called him a soft on crime and a liberal tool of Chuck Schumer, and he's a tool of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, and he won't MAGA. Well, that son of a bitch was on the phone to Doug Jones. I'm really looking forward to working with you. And Doug Jones, good lawyer. Doug Jones responded by saying, "Well, that's mighty nice of you to call. We do appreciate it. I'll stop by, you know. I will. You hear me? I'll stop right by the White House, all right?" Donald Trump called Doug Jones a lot of things. What he didn't call him was what he is and was: a damn good prosecutor. And being as how there's an opening now, thanks to what was done to Al Franken, being as how there's an opening on the Senate Judiciary Committee, what say we put that, Chuck Schumer puts that good prosecutor right there on Judiciary? I bet he knows how. Wouldn't it be fun if he got to cross-examine Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III? Or maybe strategically you don't want him doing that, because there's probably still some people who feel kindly toward Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. So that's where we are, and I just wanted to take a little time to savor and enjoy and appreciate it. Dadgummit. And I hope y'all are enjoying it as much as I. Thank you, Reggie. Just got a note from Reggie. Said, I took your advice and made two donations to the Jones campaign, $75 total. Best money I spent all year. I'm glad you did, Reggie. I'm so glad you did. Thank you. Thank you, Reggie. Reggie's been a friend of this program for a very, very long, long time, a member of this community. Thank you for doing that, Reggie. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Steve from Georgia Stan, and anybody else who kicked in to change the United States, to cause that crevasse to open in the solid South. Thank you. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. I'm voting in a by-election this Saturday. Our local federal member was one of a number of sitting parliamentarians who either was a dual citizen or not a citizen at all and not entitled to sit in Parliament. Some migrated as kids and just assumed they were Australians but never checked the paperwork. As usual, voting is mandatory. I know that because I recently received a $55 fine for not voting in the local council elections. I explained my situation, disabled, and all is okay. I still don't understand why people who live in the USA don't vote if they don't feel like it. The greatest democracy in the world, where few bother to vote. It's just weird. Well, it is. It is, but in the long view, it makes perfect sense, Robert. Because this country was founded on the idea that we were going to have a democracy, but we didn't want too terribly many people participating in it. Started out that only the landed property-owning gentry could participate in it. Women certainly couldn't. People who didn't own land couldn't. God knows, enslaved human beings couldn't. The native people who had been here for 10,000-15,000 years, oh no, well, at least the ones that who survived the arrival of the white folks, they couldn't either. And over time, with people like James Madison even acknowledging that the franchise would have to be expanded as the nation grew, more people got the right to vote. But it has never been something that the power... The people in power wanted to see happen, as long as those people in power were the folks that had all the money. This is inextricably entwined with capitalism. $300,000+ Americans and $300,000+ traders had to die in a war just to end slavery. Even then, the franchise was grudgingly extended to the people who had been freed and then viciously yanked back via a terrorism campaign that's known as the Resistance to Reconstruction. After that, the women's suffrage movement. After that, the renewed struggle to provide the franchise to people who constitutionally had it in the first place, African Americans. And lately we've been in a retrograde motion, going back to the Shelby County case, you know, that county just adjacent to Jefferson County, Birmingham in Alabama. That Moore carried last night, but not by nearly as much as Trump did. The Shelby County case was what gutted the Voting Rights Act. And if anything, last night proved that we need the Voting Rights Act back. Put the Voting Rights Act back, and most of this photo ID nonsense would go away. So we have a way forward. A way forward. All right, so it's 22 minutes past the hour. I'm going to go to the phones here in just a second. But let me note that we've still got $70 to go on Chris's challenge. Please let's not let that go by the boards. And after that, $70 to go on that and $245 to go total to finish the evening. It would be great just to match Chris's challenge. And maybe take a bite out of the 175. I don't know. But if we could, it would be magnificent. Okay, let's run over. I don't know if this is a good sign or what, but let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hello.
How in the world are you?
I'm all right. I'm strangely optimistic with a proviso. That is to say, in all future GOP races, they'll have to run a candidate who's a religious fanatic and a pedophile to guarantee Democratic success.
Well,
And how are we going to arrange that?
Well, I don't know that you can fairly say that, Scott, at least part of that, because Doug Jones has said the same thing that I said. This race was winnable by him even without the pedophilia allegations. That just provided a national focus.
That's true. I mean, I was just making a modest attempt at levity. But, man, last night, I can't remember the last time there was an election that really had me on the edge of my seat. Because those early returns came in from the less populated areas in the far-flung regions, which are generally, you know, GOP strongholds. And it was like, and they kept holding back the counting of the releasing of the results from the major metropolitan areas, which probably would favor Doug Jones. I have so much trouble with the two candidates in this Alabama race because my dad used to work with a guy named Doug Moore.
Oh, that's going to make everything just a mess now, isn't it?
Well, it's only because, you know, you've got Doug Jones, you've got Roy Moore, and you've got former firefighter, Roy. Well, shit, now I don't even remember the guy's name, Doug Moore. Jesus. But anyway, I just would like to see Roy Moore hurl his ponderous bulk up onto the back of poor Sassy.
Well, I've been worrying a little. I've been a little bit worried about Sassy, Scott.
And head off into the sunset.
Yeah, I'm. I'm worried about poor Sassy. I'm hoping he didn't take it out on the horse.
No, I thought about that. Well, the horse, that somehow one of the tabloid newspapers got to the horse for a comment in the wake of last night's adventure, and the horse apparently told at least one tabloid reporter that Roy Moore was overheard muttering over and over to himself, "Damn, this race is tighter than a teen bride," you know.
Yeah, anyway. That's right. You're trying to get me hate mail again, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm truly not. I'm just happy and relieved that. And you're right about what is the deal with this slow walking of the certification of the vote down in Alabama? I mean, what have they got? Medieval scribes working with ink pots and quill pens?
Yeah, it's Gregorian chants with a washboard and a banjo.
Jesus. When they want to get something done, they're right on the case, okay? But they'll slow walk a motherfucker when it's not the outcome that they prefer. Although, McConnell probably, in his heart of hearts, does prefer that it played out the way it did, because that probably kept him up nights, sitting upright in his coffin. You know, he sleeps in from sunrise until sunset.
Yeah, just running his fingers through the dirt from the old country, right?
Yeah, yeah. But you got to figure that was a Roy Moore win would have been the ultimate nightmare scenario for the GOP. And as one of the things that I was thinking last night, and I switched over to CNN for a while, and I saw old Santorum, and I said, Jesus, I can't stand much of that, you know, sanctimonious schmuck. But one of the things, as the pundits were doing,
that's sanctimonious fetus fondling frothy mixture schmuck to you,
yeah.
Mister.
with the little fetus in the jar. Jesus. But didn't he have literally a fetus in a jar sitting up on his mantelpiece at one point?
They didn't go that far, but when his wife gave birth to a badly, badly premature, you know, they got all religious about it and poured water on it and mumbled in Latin around it and then took it home and terrorized their children with it and said, this is your baby brother Smedley, and played hot potato with the fetus.
Oh Lord. Jeez, and these people get out and vote. That's the frightening thing.
But that's also the same guy who said that letting gay people get married was the next thing people would be having sex with dogs.
Yeah.
That's him.
Man upon dog, Santorum. add that to the litany. You know, frothy mixture, sweater vest wearing. anyway, fetus worshiping, fetus fixated. Well, you can come up with the list. But getting to the point, one of the things that I was thinking as I was watching the pundits doing their punditry last night was, this is starting to look as if it's starting to resemble around the edges and maybe inwardly a little bit the situation that the Democrats found themselves in the wake of Bill Clinton's election originally in 1992. And I'm speaking here of the Congress, the House primarily, And there were scandals galore. You remember the White House, or I mean the House banking thing, and when Jim Wright did some shenanigans with royalties from some book, and just a litany of little scandals that the Republicans in the House made merry with. Because you got to remember, the House had been under Democratic control for what, 26 years, 23 years, something like that, up until that point. And then Newt rode in. There's a crazy bastard. But, with his contract on America, you remember that?
Oh, yes. I certainly do.
I've still got my little postcard that was in TV Guide back when TV Guide was not a Rupert Murdoch-owned publication, and back when you could actually get all the channels into the pages of TV Guide. And the Republicans ran an ad with one of these little prepaid, postpaid cards that you would rip out and sign to say that I support the contract. They called it the contract with America. I always called it the contract on America. There's a difference in those little words.
Yeah, as I did.
So, but anyway, I can't help but think that the Republicans as an institution, and believe me, they ought to be in an institution, are kind of in the place where the Democrats were said to be back before the Republicans took over in 94. Now, granted, in the off-year elections, they more often than not will benefit the party that does not hold the White House. That's just a standard operating procedure. But I'm telling you, those 23 seats, which will determine control of the House, are looking more and more gettable, depending on where those seats are in the wake of recent events. And the other part of it is none of this happens in a vacuum, and none of this is a static thing. And when you think about the ever-changing nature of life, you've got to remember the Earth is rotating on its axis to create a day, but at the same time, the Earth is revolving around the sun, okay, over a year's time and makes one revolution. And you've got to also remember that our solar system goes through certain gyrations, and its place in the galaxy and the universe and all the other, vastness out there, we're not in a standing still situation. Everything is constantly in motion and in progress and in flux. And the same people who voted Trump in, and we saw this last night, the same people who voted Trump in by a humongous margin in Alabama just over a year ago, a lot of those folks, or some of those folks anyway, said, well, wait a minute, we have an opportunity to vote. We have a choice here. Let's think this through. And didn't I read or hear somewhere that Trump's approval in Alabama has dropped like 30 points since election night of 2016?
I saw the same thing last night, and it does appear to have changed somewhat significantly. And, of course, counties that he was winning by the 70-plus percentages last night, Moore was carrying by 50%, like Shelby County.
Yeah, and the turnout of the voters was not anywhere near what it was. And that does happen in special elections, but it happened in a big way with Roy Moore. So, I don't know, I'm strangely optimistic.
Well, I mean, I think there's cause for it, but, with caution.
There
are opportunities, and this charted a way forward with one particular example in mind, and that is Tennessee. Now, I grew up 11 miles from the Tennessee state line, and so, there was a considerable affinity between my community and Tennessee, especially because my community was dry and those 11 miles were the distance that you had to travel in order to obtain beer.
Yeah.
Okay. And boy, did we. But Tennessee, you know, Bob Corker's not going to run again. And that means that between now and whenever the registration deadline is in Tennessee is the time that the Democrats have to find a viable Senate candidate. And comparing Tennessee and Alabama, well, Tennessee likes to consider itself to be far, far more civilized than Alabama. I mean, they've even got, you know, one or two members of the House of Representatives who are, you know, Democrats. Steve Cohen being one of them. He was pretty good today. He got all kinds of under Louis Asparagus Gohmert's skin. And Louis called him a liar right there on the dais. And I was kind of hoping that some sword canes would be drawn or something like that, but no such luck. Or at least, you know, asparagus at 20 paces. But they have a pretty broad talent pool, and the right person could win, as a Democrat, the right person could win that Senate seat.
Well, and the Democrats finally got it in Alabama last night, and what they got was one size fits all in terms of candidates is not the way to go. A lot of people were poo-pooing Doug Jones because he was a raving moderate, if anything. Well, that's what'll play in a state like Alabama, okay? This one size fits all. Who was it? What's his name? The guy, the doctor who was running for president in the early 2000s from Vermont. He's on MSNBC all the time.
Oh, Howard Dean? Sure, yeah.
Howard Dean. Howard Dean, when he was chairman of the party, was a strong supporter of the notion that the Democrats must have a 50-state game plan. But I think with that, he also was an advocate of the notion that you've got to tailor the candidate to the place where the candidate is running. And there are limits to that. I mean, obviously, you don't want a complete nut running on your side. But at the same time, you don't have to be all that sane to win against Republicans in some of these places, as we found out the other night, last night. So
no, you've got to run people, and I tried to explain that. You couldn't, you can't run somebody in Alabama that you could run from Vermont. Although there was an interesting moment. I saw that Breitbart panel of weirdos who were going to vote for Roy Moore, and one of them talked like this, and I'm like, God damn, you're from really North Alabama, aren't you?
Yeah, Philadelphia.
But, for instance, where guns are concerned, I have a position on firearms that is considerably to the left of even Democrats, many Democrats in this state. Not all of them, but many of them. And you know what? You are dead in the water in Alabama if you start saying much of anything about guns. But on other topics, the groundbreaking quality of what Doug Jones did is made clear by the stuff. You know, he openly said, "I'm pro-choice," and he won.
Mm-hmm.
He openly said he supports Medicaid expansion in Alabama, and he won. He supports CHIP, and he won.
He is fully supportive of women's rights beyond their recognizing women as fully actualized people of their own agency beyond their reproductive organs, and he won. But a southern liberal progressive is going to look and sound different than a California progressive or a New England progressive, or even a Minnesota or Upper Midwest progressive. And you would have no more chance of electing a southern progressive in Minnesota than you would of electing an Oregon progressive in Alabama.
Well, it turns out he was regionally relatable and relevant. And he didn't get off into asshattery, bullshittery, and nut bucketry, which is, hell, that was Roy Moore's bread and butter. Not a word came out of his mouth, except when he was talking out of his ass, which was most of the time, that wasn't steeped in asshattery, nut bucketry, and bullshittery, with a lot of religion and just crazy talk thrown into the mix. And if you give voters an attractive candidate, and by attractive, I don't mean physically attractive, I mean someone who resonates with them and shows them, just supports them in the choice of making him or her their choice, they will not let you down, as we saw last night. And that makes me very happy that we can get it right in so many ways, as we apparently did last night in Alabama.
Well, I said it was winnable before the molestation allegations even surfaced. It was a question of figuring out how to talk to that 92.5% of the electorate who didn't show up in the goddamn runoff. I mean, I don't, and for the life of me, as I watched all of this unfold, I couldn't figure out why nobody, and I mean nobody, was talking about the fact that Roy Moore only wound up being the Republican nominee by virtue of having captured 7.5% of the vote.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're inured to just accepting that Americans don't much care for participating in their own government, but goddamn, 7.5%, and people are saying, "Wow, he's done."
Well, and that's the thing. The participation factor is another part of the conversation. And to my way of thinking, if you don't participate, then you will end up getting what you get. And chances are, probably quite high, you're not going to care for the outcome that results as a natural result of your non-participation. People have got to understand, and Democrats are very slow to learn this. Hell, we learned it in 2010. Everybody was so caught up basking in the afterglow of the 08 Obama victory that they sat out, they sat out 2010, okay? And we see where that got us. Every opportunity that I've ever had to vote, I have voted. And some people say, well, it doesn't have any more impact than the walk and don't walk button at the intersections in major metropolitan cities. All that does is give you the illusion that you're participating in the walk, don't walk, doing what it would otherwise naturally do. And I don't believe that. I think to the extent that you show up and make your wishes known, that does count for something, somehow. Hell, we see it on the Republican side all the time. Those bastards, you know, you see them out there with walkers and wheeled in and, you know, portable oxygen devices. Those bastards never miss an opportunity to vote. And as a result, there is some effect that comes out of that. So
I don't disagree. There's a lot of pieces of this puzzle. It was interesting, as I have remarked on this program before. There is no more heated rivalry in the United States than that of Alabama versus Auburn, or Auburn versus Alabama.
Yeah.
Auburn won this year. And yet, if you looked at the electoral map last night, Tuscaloosa County, where the University of Alabama is, and Lee County, where Auburn is. And Auburn is I know this is a relative term, and it's going to sound silly to say it to most of the people who are listening. Auburn is a far more conservative school than Alabama is. Auburn is almost paleo-conservative. And it went resoundingly for Doug Jones. And it is interesting that on the last night he was there, Steve Bannon, who was described by fellow Republican Peter King of New York earlier today as looking like a disheveled drunk.
I saw that.
I favor gin-soaked tater tot myself.
Have we heard much from Trump?
Bannon looks more like, and I mean no insult to the memory of the great William Charles Duncan Field, but he looks like W.C. Fields with more hair and worse clothing.
Yeah.
But not nearly as talented. But Bannon spent part of his last night there gooning on the University of Alabama and Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, I heard about that too. Joe had fun with that.
Well, I mean, anybody who spent any time at the Capstone had fun with that. The Capstone is what we call the University of Alabama. Auburn and Alabama people have their fun going back and forth at each other. But it does get to be, you know, except for when an Alabama fan goes down and poisons a magnificent tree. It's kind of like the good-natured family squabbles that take place in non-dysfunctional families. And when he said, "Well, you know, Joe Scarborough only went to Alabama. I got into Georgetown and Harvard," you know, you could almost hear the entire state of Alabama going, "Oh no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You did." I mean, there was even kind of a hush in the barn where that rally was had. And
Well, Bannon, I mean, he is, to me, evil.
Well, first and foremost, he's a fuck-up, okay?
Well, there's that.
and he's a grifter. And the other thing is, he's much like what we've discussed with regard to Russia. He's a chaos agent.
Yeah.
They sowed chaos into the 2016 election for the sake of sowing chaos, because any time that they can, if they can create a political split in the people of the United States, or broaden one, it inures to their benefit. They did not want to have to deal with Hillary Clinton for 4 to 8 years. And now they don't have to, but it's turning out to be a pain in the ass for them. But chaos, the idea of creating chaos comes first, and then what you do with the chaos comes second. Bannon is a lot like that in that regard. He wants to see chaos inside the Republican Party. Frankly, he's one of those I'd rather rule in hell than serve in heaven types, okay? If the Republicans were to completely lose the majorities in the House and Congress, and Steve Bannon had bona fide, guaranteed, goose-stepping, stiff-arm saluting, alt-right, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, and the entire Republican minority was made up of them, he'd be happy with that.
Well, he operates out of a burn-it-down mindset. Never mind that he has not an inkling of an idea of what to put in its place. We just got to burn this motherfucker down, in his mind. I mean, that's how he shows up for me. And I forget where I heard it, whether it was last night or this morning. The scuttlebutt is that Trump was basically disinclined in terms of giving a full-throated support of Roy Moore, okay? And Bannon supposedly talked him into it, apparently showed him some internal polling that indicated that Roy Moore was going to win. And Trump managed half-heartedly to go to, where was it, Pensacola, Florida, within 20 miles or something of the Alabama border. He didn't even want to put his toe in the water. He wanted to get as close as you could get in a major market without actually going into the state to say nice things about Roy Moore. And there was some report late last night around the White House. There was noise reported of the sound of glass breaking from a TV set that had been thrown through one of the windows out onto the to the South Lawn. I don't know. I haven't verified that, but but you got to figure he's not a happy camper because he supported Luther, Big Luther Strange, in the primaries, Trump did, and then he got convinced to support Roy Moore, and he's 0-2 in terms of Alabama. You know, plus he's actually 0-3 when you consider that he's got a big, fat, honking case of buyer's remorse in terms of Jeff Sessions. You know, and he said so. I mean, he said if he knew he was going to recuse himself, he wouldn't have named him, you know, nominated him for the head of whatever he's the head of, the Justice Department. Or, yeah, Jesus, it's so hard to keep him straight. And you always feel icky after you've, you know, flipped through the pages.
Oh, I know.
Speak. But anyway, I generally speaking, I'm a happy camper today. I, you know, as positive as I was hoping for Doug Jones, I really did, even up until last night, I wasn't entirely sure that he was going to pull it off.
And I wasn't either. I mean, that's why I said that's why I said the Monday night, my heart says he wins and my head says he loses.
And it was almost surgical in its precision. He knew exactly where he had to campaign, how he had to campaign, and who he had to send his message to. And then the people on the ground had to follow through. God, that was a mammoth undertaking, given the state of the Democratic Party writ large in Alabama. I mean, the party infrastructure is probably, well, bordering on non-existence. I mean, when you compare it to the Republicans down there.
There were... You had the luxury. I mean, it's not that huge. It's not like running in Texas, okay? But you know that Huntsville has a high potential vote turnout, population wise, and in terms of the demographics. And you know Jefferson County and Mobile County, and then what is referred to as the Black Belt. That has nothing to do with ethnicity. That has to do with the soil. And those, you know, that's where the Democratic Party does best. But even if you got what you expected, you had to get more. One of the reasons that was explained last night as I watched MSNBC was that I think it was Steve Kornacki said that the Jones campaign had an unrealistic expectation of what they would get in terms of turnout from African Americans. And it turns out it wasn't unrealistic at all. They got more than they set out to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because providing people a window of hope goes a long damn way. And that was Doug Jones was a vehicle for hope. Now the thing that attaches to him now is that he cannot go to the Senate and be one of those Republican light Southern Democrats. You know, I watched his news conference this afternoon. He was making happy mouth noises about reaching across the aisle and all of that stuff. And that's the kind of thing you have to do. This guy's a lawyer. This guy is not Hog D Baller Joni Ernst, okay? he knows not to play everything all at once. He's not one of these simpletons who thinks that you just march in with your six guns a-blazing. No, by God, you wait in the tall grass and you cut them off at the knees and then you kick their ass for being short. And so, you know, of course he's going to say things like, well, you know, that was a mighty nice phone call that I got from President Trump. That's real nice of him. Because Trump still wields considerable influence down there, so he's not going to say that, boy, I sure can't wait to get to Washington and get busy on prosecuting that sumbitch. Because it ain't going to work. I mean, that's a surefire way to lose. So I'm taking a wait and see where that's concerned, but the most important thing is to get him seated.
Yeah, because right now, I mean, once he's in there, the Republicans will have a one vote majority, and I heard that John McCain went into the hospital today, not to wish him any ill, but you know, if he's laid up.
And you know what? If you're a cynic, you say that it's just bullshit manipulation. But if you think that, say, Joe Biden is actually a decent, caring human being, he had a moment with Meghan McCain today on The View.
Yeah.
Where Meghan broke down bawling and talking about her daddy's cancer. And you know, he jumped right in there, you know, because he dealt with it with his own son.
Yeah.
And his son had the same kind of cancer that McCain has, glioblastoma.
Yeah, isn't that what Ted Kennedy had?
I'm not sure, but he said to her, if anyone can make it, your dad can. And then he went on to say, her dad goes after me hammer and tongs. We were like two brothers who somehow were raised by different fathers or something because of our points of view. But I know, and I mean this sincerely, her dad got mad at me. He told me I should get the hell off the ticket. And you remember what I said? And I mean this sincerely. I know that if I picked up the phone tonight and called John McCain and said, John, I'm at 2nd and Vine in Oshkosh, and I need your help, come, he would, and I would for him too. And I'm as cynical as they come. And Joe is thinking about a presidential run. And that was really great optics. But it's also possible that there's some essential decency out there. But yeah,
well,
at the same time, if McCain is not available for this vote, the problems get even worse for McConnell.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at. I mean, and isn't the universe interesting enough in the way it operates that could be the exact situation that plays out? Because I don't guess that McConnell, if McCain is laid up for some length of time and physically cannot get to the, because you can't vote, there's no app on your smartphone to vote on the Senate floor. You've got to,
you must be present to win.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like the casinos out here. Big giveaways every Friday night, but in little tiny type, you must be present to win. Okay? But it was, I think it was a case of the Obamacare, where they actually had to wheel in somebody, either on a stretcher or a gurney or a wheelchair or something. Hell, it might have been West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd. There was some pivotal vote. Maybe it wasn't health care, but there was some pivotal Senate vote, and they actually had to wheel him in to give his vote, and he gave it, and they wheeled him right back out. So
I can't remember exactly who that was, but toward the end of his life, he did show up in rather frail condition.
Yeah, but my point is, McConnell is not going to vote if he, because the rule of thumb is you've got to be absolutely sure that you got the votes, and if one of your supporters is laid up in the hospital and physically is unable to be present, then that's not a good time to be voting. So who knows? The universe works in wondrous, interesting ways.
Well, it'll be interesting to see when and if we get to the... Well, I mean, we're going to get there, but, you know, it'll be classic McConnellism if that vote is taken before the Senate is, you know, filled with its proper contingent.
Yeah.
In addition to the campaign to... In addition to the campaign to get... Jones seated, I think there needs to be a concurrent campaign of telling Big Luther Strange to sit the f*** down and get the f*** out. Because at this point in time, he is entirely illegitimate. There is no legitimacy whatsoever to any vote that he would cast.
Well, no, wait a minute. When you're sworn in, whether it's for a special election or being named by a governor or whatever, when you're sworn in, you're in until you're replaced. And apparently the sticking point is Alabama has it fixed that they can take their good sweet time to certify.
Well, they don't have it fixed. That's just how they've chosen to do it.
Yeah.
As the former Missouri Secretary of State pointed out, it could be done in a matter of hours. Because, for instance, the automatic recount provisions of Alabama law says that you get one of those at 0.5%. Well, this is 1.5% more than that.
Yeah.
So
that pipe dream of Roy Moore's guy last night is just that, a pipe dream.
As far as I can figure out, it is. And saying, well, we have to wait for the military votes to come in. Well, you can ascertain how many military votes there were, and then you can also say, well, if he gets every last one of them. There aren't 20,000 military votes out there, and he would not get every one of them.
What was the final number on the write-ins? The last I saw was like 22,000 write-ins.
Yeah, it came out to 2%. And so that's the other part we really haven't talked about. The fact that the write-ins made a huge difference, too. And so the long knives are out for Richard Shelby as well, at least among the evangelical community in Alabama. But where that's concerned, Scott, you know, I just looked up and said, well, motherfuckers, you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Yeah.
Because remember, Richard Shelby was elected to the Senate as a Democrat. And
yeah.
he went turncoat in 1994. And so in saying what he did on Sunday, I'm going to write the name in of a good Republican. I will not vote for Roy Moore. When he said that, that was just a teeny tiny little bit of redemption for the evil that he did in 1994.
Yeah.
And so where, you know, back in 94, where they were celebrating, well, all of a sudden... the pendulum swung back, and it was a nice little piece of work on the part of the goddess of irony.
Well, and I meant to mention this before when we were talking about the Senate tax bill, the operation on, because it's got to be, once they reach a compromise, it's got to pass again in the House and the Senate. And if that's successful, then it goes to the president for a signature. Okay? But even if McCain is present and voting, we don't know what's in this conference version of this legislation. There could be a couple of Republicans whose needs are not being met. And
well,
they've already...
look, it has to pass in both the House and the Senate. And just because it got, just because they hammered out a compromise in the conference committee, doesn't mean that there will be a sufficient number in both houses who say, "Oh yeah, I love what they did with that."
Yeah, because there's every good reason to think they could have made it worse. Because again, things always being in flux, if I take one peg out of the toy, that resonates somewhere else in the toy and affects its operation over on that end.
Well, it's like having 10 psychotic interior decorators in a house.
Yeah.
And they agree that they're going to nail all the furniture to the ceiling and paint, and one said, okay, if you're going to let us nail all the furniture to the ceiling, then we'll give in to you and you can you can paint all the world, all the walls in that hypnotic black and white spiral swirl. So anybody walking into the room will immediately start vomiting.
Yeah, and you've just described my decoration.
I was going to say, is that your living room?
Yeah, you've described it. You've never been here. I've never posted pictures.
Well, I'm psychotic that way. I'm psychotic that way.
You certainly are.
But then the thing is, you go back to the people who hired the 10 designers and you say, "We've hammered out a compromise." And they walk in and they go, "What the have you done?" Right, well, we compromised. They got the furniture on the ceiling and we got the hypnotic spirals.
Yeah.
And the people who bought the house said, "Yeah, but we hate it all." And you hope, since there were no Democrats included in this process whatsoever, you hope that there will be enough pushback. But again, that's predicated, Scott, on people actually knowing what's in the bill. And when Democrats said, "Hey, what's in the bill?" McConnell said, "Well, you'll find out when I think it's good and goddamn time for you to find out, about 15 minutes after we've voted, you sons of bitches."
Yeah, and weren't the Republicans the party who a couple of years ago made a big deal about putting the legislation public?
Absolutely. Everything was going to be online and available for reading and reviewing and downloadable and...
Oh yeah, yeah.
That lasted until the echo of the gavel of Paul Ryan's first gavel strike stopped bouncing around the House chambers.
Yeah. Well, if anything, this could be an understatement. It is not a done deal yet, and it may not ever be a done deal, because the longer it remains undone or unimplemented, the longer people will have to look at it,
right?
It's a
bad metaphor for this time of year, but it's a bucket of fish guts left in the warm sun.
There you go.
You can deal with them. You can deal with it when they're fresh fish guts, but the older they get and the warmer they get, the harder it is to look at it and say, dinner.
Yeah, and I don't know how you've done it. But bucket of warm fish guts left in the sun is the candle aroma, the scent that I bought just the other day at the Yankee candle.
Well,
website.
Yum.
And it really just punches up the ceiling furniture and the black and white.
Does it bring the whole room together? Does it pull the whole room together?
It pulls it together like you wouldn't believe. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go now to throw up a little bit. because it's starting to get to me.
And not without answering the question, you're not.
Yeah, but wait a minute. I thought earlier when you mentioned all of that on the air that you were given a waiver.
Well, I was, but I mean, I don't want you to, you know, but dude, we had a weekend.
Yeah, but I had to go through all the 77 Sunset Strips from the week.
Oh, you didn't just play that. No, you did.
But see, when the weekend is when I record new stuff and I've got to free up the space. I know I'm sounding like Trump here with my excuses, but and God help us if that's what I'm starting to turn into. But to answer your question, I will. I honest to God will. You don't know what it's like here, Bob. You just don't know what it's like.
Well, you got that. You got Punky screaming his fool head off all hours of the day and night. No, I understand.
And the cat has been acting weird. I don't know what it is. It's something.
It's the solstice. It's the solstice.
Well, somebody was saying that Saturn is in some house for the next year and a half, and and I'm not a big fan of astrology, but they say it's those who believe in such things add a certain import to it in terms of the affairs of human beings scrambling around on the earth. So
well,
I don't know.
All I can tell you is don't make us send the German nihilists around, okay?
Oh no. That's all I need. It's bad enough when the Jehovah's Witness lady comes to the door. They found me. They used to show up once a year at the old place, and apparently they found out that
well, you shook hands with them once, and they implanted an RFID chip in you, and that's how it works. I remember long ago. I think the particular Jehovah's Witnesses have gone on to their reward or lack thereof. I don't understand the theology at all, but there was a gang of Jehovah's Witnesses that stalked Agnes because she wouldn't just shit on them out of hand. And because Agnes is a sweet human being, she's a sweet and lovable person, and so it got to where and once they got their hooks in her, they wanted to talk, and they wanted here we got 15 different issues of the Watchtower we want to leave with you, honey, and oh well, thank you, and there was a little marital strife involved with it, but sweetheart, please. Don't ever bring that into our house again. I don't even want you using it for the cat box. You know, next
the
thing you know, they'll be
watchtower.
They'll be proselytizing.
Was it you earlier the other day or something brought up the name of Garner Ted Armstrong and Herbert W. Armstrong?
Well, it was when Dr. Phillips and I were talking.
Yeah. I remember my first radio job was in 73, and after 6 hours of music from 6 to midnight, driving home for an hour, I didn't want music, I wanted talk. And I would flip through, you know, scan through the analog dial on the AM car radio, and one of these stations in D.C. at midnight every night would run The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong.
Well, like I said, talking to Dr. Phillips, he was kind of interesting.
Oh, he was. He was fascinating.
Dr. Phillips went on to point out that it was one of his followers who went in and tried to set fire to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. You know, the Dome of the Rock.
He mentioned that. Yeah, I remember that.
And very well could have come close to starting the World War III that he was yearning for. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that the Jehovah's Witnesses came after Agnes, and after a while, if she saw him coming, she would go and run and hide in the bathroom while somebody else would answer the door. And the first time she did it, She said, you get the door. I'm going into the witness protection program. And so when that's what that became. When the Jehovah's Witnesses would show up, Agnes would go into witness protection and go and hide in the bathroom from the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Well, I've found that if you just calmly tell them that you can't talk now, you're on your way to give blood, they will flee. They will, their pamphlets will flutter and fall in their wake as they flee down the sidewalk.
There's all sorts. So. And that's the thing. Playing with the Jehovah's Witnesses is, maybe it's a little unfair because they're not Atne Ute Aitbrei, if you own what I mean. But there's always the, good morning, do you have a few minutes? Can we leave you? Hail Satan, how you doing? Or, and sometimes it's as simple as saying, well, thank you, but, you know, I'm a very happy practicing Roman Catholic. And at that, they will run.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll run. But hail Satan is all, and hail Satan is, hail Satan is also really, really good for Mormons. You know, those fresh, clean cut, you know, good morning, hail Satan. Don't think we're going to convince you to come to Kolob with us today.
Yeah. Well, I got, you know, getting, just to close on this, I ended up subscribing, the free subscription to the Plain Truth magazine.
Oh, yes.
From the Worldwide Church of God. And sooner or later, I wrote for additional literature of some sort, and I figured they would mail it. Well, it was hand-delivered by people who wanted to come in and speak with me.
Yeah.
And
never did
I,
that again, did you?
No, you bet your sweet. I didn't want nobody showing up wanting to come in and have a piece of Aunt Effie's pound cake and talk about my eternal soul. I don't need that right now, thank you.
No, not by a long shot. Right.
Yeah. All right, let me let you go, because I didn't intend to talk to you.
Well, no worries, but putting his massive deductive powers to work, Randy in PA wants you to know that the cat acting weird is because of the bucket of warm fish guts candle you're burning.
There you go. Well, that could be. That could very well be.
Yep, 8:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I've ruined somebody's dinner somewhere with bucket of warm fish guts. All right, Scott, have a good evening.
All right, Bob, take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott and Punky calling from some, what I presume to be sunny San Diego. Yeah, a bucket of warm, sorry. Happens that way sometimes. You'll have that. But that's good conversation. That's the meaning of conversation radio. And if you ever feel a hankering and you've never called, you are mighty welcome to jump in most any time. Hey, look, it's our buddy Todd in South Carolina. Hey, Todd.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, man, you caught me off guard.
Chicken, pepperoni, and Italian cheese?
Yeah. Oops. You caught me off guard so badly, but I'm going to make up for it. Don't worry.
Okay. Take it.
All right.
Breathe.
All right. Okay. God, dog. Okay. All right. Sorry.
Letting go now. Letting go now. Yes.
Oh, I'm really good tired tonight. I had a, anyway, so first of all, oh my God, I'm so glad I was so wrong about Alabama. The Alabamians, they were saying, I love Ella saying that shit. Alabamian. I mean, it just rolls off your tongue, right?
Well, you'd be surprised for how many people it doesn't. I've heard so many people on the for-profit media saying, Alabamans.
No, right. I mean, you just got to roll with it. Come on.
Roll tide. But, yeah, for some reason or another, it doesn't make a lot of grammatical sense, but there's an extra I in there. Just like you got to work an extra, I think you have to work an extra I in for people from Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsinians. It's just one of those weird English things, you know, I before E, except after Labor Day or something. And so, you know, that's what you wind up with. But, yeah, Alabamians.
Yeah, I hate it for the ESL people. I mean, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, see, Tennessee ends with a long vowel, so you just got to put the A-N-S on it so it's Tennesseans and it's not a problem.
Oh, my goodness.
But if it ends with a consonant, you got to do something with it.
You know something, Bob? I bet you could do a whole program just on that, on like conjugation and how you say certain states.
Dude,
certain
we're already names. In a fundraising hole. What, are you trying to kill the program?
No, man, you get me on these tangents. I'm just saying, it's just, you know how you like language and certain people. I like language.
I do, but it rises to a level of unhealthy obsession sometimes because it makes it hard to watch television, hard to listen to radio. My children kind of hated me when they were little because I wanted to make sure that they had at least a fighting chance of speaking decent English and not being immediately written off by anybody who got around them because they talk hillbilly. Yeah, because
don't you want to get a good job? You have to, come on.
Well, Todd, it's a reality. You know, if you've got a thick Brooklyn or Queens or Philly or Chicago accent, nobody's going to look at you and go, "You must be stupid."
Yep.
But if you've got a Southern accent or an Appalachian accent, that is what immediately, that's the judgment people immediately make. Oh, you sound like that. You must be stupid.
Right. And that's a shame. See, that's prejudging. And, you know, if your name is Laquifa or Dakarius or, you know, certain names, man. I mean, it's that's why the incident with the kids, and they were sick ass somewhere in Mississippi, and they were like, "No niggers in our fraternity ever," blah, 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 chanting this. I'm like, yeah, you know, those are going to be somebody on that bus is going to be working in HR, you know, within 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I remember the story you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. But I'm off on these tangents, man. I'm so sorry. Scott, you always have nice.
But you're feeling pretty good. And I'll bet you you're even thinking, hey, if they can do it in Alabama, I'll bet we could do it in South Carolina.
That's what I'm thinking. And I'm thinking that we can have chicken and pepperoni and Italian cheese. See, that was wrapped in that dough from yogurt and flour mix.
Oh,
and that's all I'm
with
say.
It. Oh, yeah.
See, and I'm learning with this because you probably work with it more than me now, but I don't know. But what I'm saying is that some dough you want to sprinkle the flour on your prep surface, but this you want to use the oil, and it just stretches the oil, it stretches the dough out, and it makes it nice and flaky when it bakes. I mean, there's an Italian word. An Italian term. In other words, when you go to an Italian place, like in the city, they have these kind of pot. It's like a fancy hot pocket is what it really is. But
it sounds like an extremely fancy hot pocket without all the leathery qualities of the hot pocket dough.
Oh, no, none of the leathery. And you know, you're able to, monitor the cooking and make sure, you know, you make the dough, you made it by, it's handmade, so you can tell when it's ready. And it gets flaky. Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, see, you're hurting me because it has been just brutal blue-ass cold. Colder than a well digger's ass. I mean, it got ugly last night. Got down to like 12. And I think it got down to like 35 in the bedroom. And I had to get out the Arctic sleeping bag. It was just laughing at the temperature was just laughing at the space heater and laughing at my little portable propane heater. Couldn't even tell it was on. Had to sit on my hands to get feeling back in them. Couldn't have my hands outside the blankets.
I wanted to ask you about that. I heard you talking about the heaters and there's so many issues here, but the small portable heaters. Now I hear you using the propane and, you know, I don't know if that has to do with circuits in the house, because I live in an old house also, but maybe for folks who don't have propane or don't use propane, the ceramic heater, see, we're from an age when, remember, a portable heater used to be like basically a toaster with a fan on it. It was totally inefficient.
And then it would be right. And then it would burn your house down. Yes.
It would burn your house down quick. I mean, you would have no house. Seriously. And the heater might still be there and nothing. So these ceramic heaters, they really work. They're tiny and they're cheap and they work and they're really efficient.
Yeah, those little cubes. But, we used to use one of those in the bathroom because it was a small space. And as long as you keep the door shut, yeah.
Right, but you can get they're so inexpensive now. Use up a lot of power, you know.
The one we've got in the bedroom is it's one of those. It's got rollers on. It's got casters on the bottom, and it's an infrared thing with a fan on it and a thermostat. Had a remote. Mm-hmm. Had a remote that was about the size of half of a credit card. That was immediately lost. But it, you know, down to about 20 degrees, it does a passing fair job. Once you go below 20, though, it's like the house doesn't have walls. It was like camping out last night. I mean, nasty.
Is that the one that looks like a radiator, or the one that looks like one of those Amish boxes?
Yeah, it's just a little black box. Or I mean, yeah,
a little black box.
It's about it's about a foot and a half on one side by a foot on another by 2 feet, one by 1.5 by two.
Well, yeah, that's hard cold. Like, I'm folks who don't know, when it gets in the teens, that's like if the wind blows, literally you can spit in the wind blowing toward you, and your spit will freeze and hit the ground and crack.
And the thing is, people further north are far more, and I mean, it gets cold here. We have more winter than you do, but the further north you are, the more prepared you are to deal with it. And in the case of this house is 80 years old this year. And part of the problem, and this is just, you know, this isn't poor mouthing. This is just reality. I've talked about the things that happened when the derecho blew through 5 years ago. It wiped out our refrigerator. It wiped out the washer. It wiped out the dryer. It wiped out the stove. Took out anything that was not hooked directly to an uninterruptible power supply with massive amounts of surge protection died. And the other thing that it got was our furnace. It got our heat pump.
And
killed that. So, you know, there went central heat. So for the last 5 years, we've gotten through winter on a combination of electric space heaters and portable propane. It sucks. I have come to dread winter. It's like you can never get warm. But I also don't have $10,000 laying around to go out and sink into a furnace.
I get it. You know, and you know, 80 years ago, they didn't build houses for extreme. And the climate was different. Number one.
Oh no, the climate was not warmer here 80 years ago. It was far colder. But it was
But it was
built to deal with the heat sources of the time. This house still has a coal chute.
Okay.
Or what used to be a coal chute, then. My grandmother and grandfather converted to home heating oil.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually we put the heat pump in, and along came the derecho and no more heat pump. And it's manageable in the summer with window unit air conditioners, but in the winter it becomes a brutal bit of business. And
yeah, you know, that's some serious stuff. It gets very cold. You know, that's that hard cold.
Yeah, we know a lot about layering here. Ferg is standing here right now, and he's got on his non-footed fuzzy. You know, it's not footy pajamas because there's no foot, but he's got his Thunder Buddies for Life teddy bear hooded union suit, a fleece over top of that, you know.
Wait, does he have a trap door? I have one with a trap door.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's got a flap. Yeah, it's got a flap. Yeah.
No, it's not funny. Look, man, this is South. Yo, this hard cold, man. No. I can empathize. I'll be honest with you. The cold is different in the South than it is in the North.
Yeah, because it's a wet cold.
It's a wet cold. People don't understand that. And this stuff comes up from under the ground. The whole house gets cold. It's like a cold blanket over the daggone house.
Yeah.
Am I exaggerating?
No. My dad, as I've said before, my dad moved from up here to down to Alabama and said the first winter he ever spent down there was the coldest he'd ever been in his life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get, you know, it doesn't get nearly as cold temperature-wise down there, but it is a wetter cold, a more humid cold. And there's a great big humongous, instead of being up on a mountain, there's a great big humongous river with freezing wind blowing across it.
That doesn't help.
No, it's like a swamp cooler that you don't want.
Oh, Bob. So, okay. I wish we had more time to chat, but I want somebody else maybe that can get in, but I want to ask you a couple of things.
Sure.
You know, so I'm feeling good about this election, like, because I felt like if this would, and I'm so happy that you really analyzed that, because I was totally wrong. I was like, oh, you know, these people are, you know, they're coming out to vote, you know, the other side. But hey, we have to, this is, I'm connecting the data points between what happened in Northern, you know, in Virginia, and what happened in Alabama, because they're disparate. They're so different. You know, they're different. It's a different demographic. You know, they're different, but they're the same in a way. But anyway, that's two data points. That's momentum. And with everything else going on, this could be looking good. This could be really looking good. Yeah. You know, I don't want to get too happy.
Yeah, all we have to do is not have the purity patrol come in and fuck it up.
They need to go away. They need to.
Well, okay. I don't know. Were you listening Monday night when I shared the piece that the idiot in North Alabama wrote?
Yeah.
She calls themselves Alex. Well, I checked her Twitter feed, and she was like, "Thank fucking God, Roy Moore lost, but Doug Jones is still a scumbag." I mean, he was a scumbag, but you know, he's never going to help us advance our socialist agenda. Well, seeing how he's not a socialist, I mean, you know, I guess not.
See, Bob, I'm glad you stay on that point about the sparkle. What do you call them?
Fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade.
Yes, because the nature of this whole experiment that we are all involved in, which we call American representative democracy, if you break it down. It's still about, it has to be compromised. Otherwise, it won't work. It's about compromise. You're never going to get, I mean, very rarely will you get everything you want. That's just crazy. And which is exactly why.
Todd, there's a fundamental disconnect in understanding process, in understanding politics, the nature of it. In many ways, I'm probably a bigger socialist than whatever that person in North Alabama thinks they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that you got to get to where you're going. You got to have a vehicle. Lenin signed on with Kerensky for as long as it was necessary, for as long as it was convenient to be with Kerensky. Okay. because Kerensky was going where Lenin wanted to be, i.e. having complete and total power. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, standing outside and screaming, all you fuckers have to do it right my way right now, goddamn it, bunch of sellouts, you establishment shills, Bernie would have won, is no way to get, all you're ever going to do is you keep standing outside the tent and yelling. And
that's it.
People aren't going to come to you. I know a lot of people, including myself, want Medicare for all. But right now, and I say this as an uninsured person, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I want little kids to have health insurance because I'm trying to follow the lead of my indigenous friends who say, you know, a lot of your problems go away if you think seven generations out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to think about them before I think about me. I'd like to have Medicare for all. I'd like to have health insurance. Wait,
let's go back to Chip. You just brought that up, and I was very impressed with Doug. You know, Doug Jones. He said that. You know, he brought up Chip. And this is a big deal. We need that vote. But well, when you cannot take care of the children, and you know, let's remember that was the evil Hillary Clinton. And by the way, I don't think I brought this up last time we talked. By the way, my friend up the street that works at the convenience store, the second time we had our little discussion, you know, after I helped him break, or we broke the political ice. It didn't take 2 seconds. What about Hillary Clinton? I was like, well, and I was very calm. Believe me, I was very calm. You have to be. They call the police. You have to be calm. I'm a black man. Look, you know. Anyway, so I was like, well, she's not president. I said, we have to worry about the fire that's burning now. And I said, I had no problem with her being prosecuted if she's done something wrong. But I don't. If she has been wrong, you know, whatever. That's up to Congress. But we need to put out the fire that's burning now. Now.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's shit to say. Like, oh, like why are you ruminating? And I caught myself. I'm like, he doesn't know what ruminating means. Okay. So, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, how are you ever going to seize power if you're not where the power is? I mean, does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, why do you think I got quiet? I'm like, well, damn, that's a good question. So you have to show people how to get there. People have power; they just don't know how to achieve it, or how to attain it, or how to keep it, or seize it. See, that's the thing, folks. I guess the Alabama, I can't even say it now. It's so funny.
Alabamians.
The Alabamians, you know, they seized the power when they had a chance. You know, and I think this can be huge. And but see, Mitch, man, Mitch is a bitch. And I mean that in the worst sense. And look at what he did. Like you said, I'm so glad you brought up Gorsuch. Oh, such a gory person. Now, what he did was awful, holding up that. And it wasn't like Garland was a wonderful, you know, liberal.
No. Merrick Garland was a prosecutor's dream. And the only thing, and he was deliberately selected by Barack Obama because he was palatable to the Republicans, because every Republican had voted to confirm him to the circuit court bench. And, you know, I guess it was another one of those Jesus Barack moments where he just did not understand that it wasn't about the quality of the judge. It was about him. And that's sad. That's sad. He was just a little too dark of skin to be allowed to appoint another Supreme Court judge.
Now that we're on this topic, and I'm not going to break off of this tangent. I'm going to stay focused because I think this is very important. You may have heard this argument where we're hearing this feedback where there needs to be another investigation because people have been contributing.
Oh no, that is so much that is so much bullshit. Now I watched that hearing today.
I did too. Well, I watched.
It was like drinking bad liquor through a straw mixed with castor oil.
Oh my goodness.
Jesus. And you know, the fact that that committee, that Paul Ryan put Louis Asparagus Gohmert, Jim Jordan Nuts, and Steve Cantaloupe's King, all on the Judiciary Committee, it tells you a lot about their theory of, you know, the judiciary and law. And like I said, Louis Asparagus Gohmert said, point of personal privilege, Mr. Chairman, I didn't do what Representative Cohen said. I didn't. He's a liar.
I want that on the record.
You saw it then.
Well, you heard? I told you I saw it. I don't lie.
Well, yeah, the members' remarks will be on the. You get the idea that even other Republicans don't like Louis Gohmert. But I was really hoping that Steve King would, or that Steve Cohen would walk over and slap old Louis so hard that his dentures would rattle.
Oh, it was like, okay, you've done what you need to do. All right, let's go back to, you know, we have some drinks for you, iced tea. You know, this dude. Yeah, and you know, do you remember? It was rich. It was so much, but it says a lot. And you see, this a whole conspiracy, Alex Jones shit. These are you can tell because I've been watching Fox News lately. These folks, Sean Hannity. What the hell is wrong with him?
He's a moron. Being a moron. But within the context of that hearing, when these Republicans were going on, Jesus Christ, you know, them people said, you know what? You got some people working for Mueller who won't admit that Hillary Clinton is the devil. Well, we need a second investigation. And they never give no money. They never give no money at all to Donald Trump. Not a nickel.
Oh, God.
And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, you hypocritical fucks.
Right.
Have we forgotten that there were FBI agents in the New York office who had a funnel set up and were just hollering into it for Rudy Giuliani to hear?
Giuliani.
That they were leaking a goddamn sieve to him about the email server inquiry?
Yep. Interesting. So, and remember, we haven't heard a peep from the gargoyle. From a long, and remember, he had interest. It's not, and the way I hear it, and I have a relative who's a colonel in the military, a full colonel, full bird. He's getting out. He already put his papers in when 45 came in. He was like, I don't think so. So. I mean, he doesn't tell me anything. You know, I talk to him, and I can just look at the expression on his face because he can't tell me anything, but we talk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on, man. And, I mean, it's a lot of moving and shaking. You're going to have that Kelly faction. There's factions in our military. I'm telling you right now, it's ugly. It's very ugly. But I think we're going to get through this. And going back to the hearing,
all we have to do is have, you know, Geezer disgust us, not start World War III. That's really the key to getting through this, Todd.
And okay, right. And one point I wanted to make about the judgment and about donations, because it took me about maybe 5 seconds, and I started thinking about Scalia and him being questioned about having a meeting with the undead one, you know, and when he went quack quack.
Yeah.
You know. And we know what you're about. It's like, it's all political now. So if you had, in other words, this is my point. And like, I try to use logic when I can. These folks, the Supreme Court, they're the highest of the high in our country. They set the standard. They've already started reinterpreting precedent, which they're not supposed to do. Look, they're judges, so they can do what they want to do. Because Gorsuch went, his first decision, he didn't go with precedent. He went against it. Like, no, you sit in your truck and die.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, goes and delivers a speech about and laughs about his opinion where he said a guy should freeze to death. Ta-da.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
And we know what his contributions. You know, so in other words, people. This is why I always say a lot of times we have unexceptional people doing exceptional jobs. And there are exceptional people who can divorce themselves from their personal views and, you know, don't let it bleed into their work. But this is why people need to be vetted. This is why we should have a process to get people in certain positions. You know, and you know, it's complicated. And let's be honest, at the same time, the FBI is not feckless. You know, the F word.
Yeah.
You know, they have a spy history because they were founded on, they just want, you know, the cornbread Midwestern white guy, you know, no minorities, no nothing like that.
Right.
You know, that went on for years, and that culture was in there, you know, until very recently. And now with this new program where they're saying Black Lives Matter is basically something you need to look at, whereas you have other organizations that are actually killing people and we don't hear anything about that. You know, that it doesn't look good. It's not a good look.
No, 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 it isn't.
But.
And look, I have a, knowing their history, I have a hard time getting all worked up about the honor and the integrity of the FBI. They have a dirty, mm-hmm. they have a dirty history. And you know, I forget who was doing the questioning, said, would you guess, questioning Rod Rosenstein, would you guess there's probably more right-wing authoritarian FBI agents than there are, say, wild-eyed liberal Democrats? And they didn't want, Rosenstein, well, you know, I certainly don't know. I haven't counted them. But, yeah, okay.
Bob, he has less than a poker face, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And
he's not good at that at all. I mean, I saw his affect change like 5, 6, 7 times. You could tell when he was like, oh.
Yeah,
there's a lot of shit coming out the pike, baby.
Oh, and but he also doesn't have that aw shucks gee willikers hominess that Comey plays so well.
Oh, no, he doesn't have that. No.
And it's kind of hard to watch this stuff, and because, you know, our inherent urge is to root for one side or the other. And it, like watching the Comey hearings, please, you know, we have Comey to thank in part for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So pardon me if I don't get all brokenhearted, but by the same token, these are the only people who can sort out the problems that we have.
Right.
We don't have better tools than we've only got. There, God damn it, there's Don Rumsfeld again. You investigate the Russian intrusion into the American election with the investigators you have, not the investigators you want. And we've got the FBI. Damn.
And And hopefully, you know, hopefully they move like, well, that's why I'm so disappointed with this Black Lives Matter thing. Is like they should be like human beings who are trying to fully actualize themselves, as Maslow would say, you know, trying to be a better human being, like try to evolve, try to learn from your mistakes. Don't go back, because that come on. I COINTELPRO, that's all that looks like to me. That does not look good at all, period. And no. That's what they're admitting to. You know?
Oh, wow. I just got some breaking news courtesy of Isaac.
What's up?
It was prayer meeting Wednesday material, but I didn't get to it. It has to do with a Republican in Kentucky, a Republican legislature, member of the legislature, Dan Johnson. And Dan Johnson was one of those folks who got caught not being a particularly good Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was... You know, he was doing what Republicans do.
Like diddling?
He has killed himself.
Oh.
WBRD reports Johnson killed himself on a bridge on Greenwell Ford Road in Mount Washington, and the gun was recovered. He went on Facebook before he did the job. The accusations from NPR are false God, and only God knows the truth. Nothing is the way they make it out to be. America will not survive this type of judge and jury fake news. Conservatives, take a stand. I love God, and I love my wife, who is the best wife in the world, my love forever. My mom and dad, my family, and all five of my kids, and 9 grandchildren, 2 in tummies, and many more to come. Each of you are a total gift from God. Stay strong. 9/11, 2001, NYC, WTC, PTSD, 24/7, 16 years is a sickness that will take my life. I cannot handle it any longer. It has won this life, but heaven is my home. See, I was talking about the muddled theology of these evangelicals.
What? Wait a minute. Yeah, Are you reading what he really wrote?
He's gonna blow his brains out, and Jesus is gonna welcome him because Jesus loves him some suicides.
Oh boy. Speaking of religion, to hear Roy Moore.
That shit,
I was like, what the hell?
It was diddling. Oh. He was under investigation for molesting a teenage girl.
Okay. Well, that's what, like you said, that's what they do. I mean, I don't want to say it like that. That's terrible. No.
But whatever it was, he said it wasn't true, and the PTSD made him do it. That sounds kind of cold on my part, but goddamn.
No, if you didn't do it, you stay alive and fight. I don't know. That's me. That's what I would do. Do you know what? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm different. I'd be like, oh, hell no. I didn't do that. Are you crazy? What would you do?
I got no idea. I got no idea.
Well, you know what? We're in for some tough times because with these, and I'll be honest with you, the way it is now, and I don't want this, and you know what? Whatever. I'm going to say what I have to say. Accusations should not bring people down because that's the oldest trick in the book. You look at the Scottsboro Boys, you look at the Central Park Five, and that's just modern stuff. I mean, that's as old as the Bible. And I'm not saying those women weren't hurt. What I am saying is that if it was that serial, where are these enablers? People are around, small communities, in the South. Somebody knows something. So those people are culpable, too. If this is what happened, where were you? Where were those people? You know, there's a change if you have a daughter and she comes home acting differently. You could tell. Or a young man.
No.
Or whatever.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And I heard exactly what you said. I heard, you know, and I heard, well, and, you know, and it's a shame because, you know, I do data work for a crisis center here. And I write grants for them too. And you have to go through a lot of stuff, you know, paperwork, blah, blah, blah. And you have to do a lot of reading on statistics. And I had no idea. 18% of males have had unwanted contact. You know.
Oh, and I suspect the number is far higher.
And, right. Those are the ones that right, exactly. Self-reported data. Right. Right. So you got to push that up a little bit. Right. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of this stuff hides behind the church and things like that. So it's really, and it's sad because, you know, for some people, religion helps. And some folks are weird or predatory, and they know that, and they go into it. So they can do that. So they can be a predator. And it's a shame. And, you know, believe me, I'm no Bible thumper. I'm just a spiritual person. I just believe, like, you know, we didn't come out of nothing. The universe came out of something. I mean, we could be a coffee stain on somebody's pants for all we know. But, you know, when you look at the universe. But anyway, these are good times. We have to ride the wave. That's what I say.
Well, I agree. I agree, Todd. And thanks for the food porn. You know, we're getting close to the solstice, so then once the solstice is past us, you know, we'll be getting into the teeth of the cold weather, but by the same token, the days will be getting longer, and we know that barbecue season will be back. And, you know, it's always barbecue season, but, you know, the fun part of barbecue season will be on the way.
Yes, Bob, it is. And Bob, you're doing a great job, and everyone, please contribute, you know, when you can, where you can, how you can.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Todd. That's very kind of you, because we're gonna close this thing out. We started at 175. We got it down to 145, and we got $70 left to go on a $100 challenge, and it looks like it's going to stay on the table. So... there we go. But it's been a great conversation. Thanks for joining in, Todd. I always enjoy it.
Hey, me too, man. You take care.
All right, we'll see you. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Todd, calling from South Carolina, Stan. Time to get out of here. The time does just fly. Thanks very kindly to Hung Like Jesus. And thank you. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Scott for jumping in and becoming a new subscriber to Stand Next to Gary on the 13th of the month. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Midweek Pinch Hit Utility Chat Room Moderator Steve from Georgia Stan, and all-around great guy. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.